and love and a little bit of harmony out there. Hey, speaking of harmony, there's copious quantities of corruption going on out there, totally harmoniously, and it doesn't seem to be opposed all that much in mainstream media, but fortunately there are alternative media representatives and activists who actually stand up and fight against corruption. One such person is a good friend of mine, Vince Seamer from kiwisfirst.co.nz, who's been fighting very hard to expose a little bit of judicial corruption in our fabulous Masonic colony called New Zealand. Vince Seamer, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Vincent. How are you?
Somewhat fabulous is my party line. Now, you've been recently called into court again. For what spurious charge this time?
Oh, well, obviously, it just comes back down to the website. What the Solicitor General alleges is a breach of an injunction that's 5 years old, which is a gagging order, basically, which prevents a lot of information from going up on my site. But truly, if you are in court, you could see it was basically cover for a much more malicious attack, and that's to shut down the site. The appearance on Friday, the two judges had actually made a demand initially that the entire site be unconditionally closed down, which I guess they thought that I would do it, but I wasn't about to, and I fought them, and it was just, it's a circus.
Yeah, it totally is. I mean, what I've found, you know, just from personal experience and sitting in the courtroom watching it happen, two things I noticed. Number one, the process being undergone seems incredibly dull, right? From these people, the judges and solicitors, you know, they got about as much charisma as soap. And what I also noticed is that they look particularly evil and unhappy. That's just from personal observation, of course. I'm not making a judgment call on them or anything. But
I think most court proceedings are about as interesting as watching grass grow, just because they are such an arduous and drawn-out affair. And lawyers typically argue law on the head of a pin, so it just gets very tedious. The hearing that we were in on Friday was just, as you know, just over an hour, and we did cover significant ground, so I tend to think that it was much faster pace. And I don't know about the evil remark. A lot of judges are evil, but I could tell that they were just worn out. They didn't want to be there. The Solicitor General actually stood on, Solicitor General's counsel actually stood on her feet and said that this was a very minor infraction, yet she was asking them to put me in prison. You can imagine how uncomfortable they felt. They wanted her to say this was a most egregious offense. To justify a prison, it's very difficult for a judge to put somebody in prison when the prosecutor stands up there and says that there's only one thing on the website, one phrase that she objects to, and it's very minor in nature. So from that point, after she said that, they became, as you know, it's a little bit conciliatory, which is very unusual.
Ladies and gentlemen, Vince Seamer from kiwisfirst.co.nz is our guest for the whole hour today. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Back live on the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. If you cruise there, make sure you check on the Guerrilla Media banner to go to guerrillamedia.co.nz. Our special guest is Vince Seamer from kiwisfirst.co.nz. Vince, welcome back.
Thank you, Vinnie.
Have you found that quote you were looking for? Apparently one of our Supreme Court judges has been, well, resigned after duress.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting. I couldn't find it because there's two massive interviews, actually, that are in the paper this weekend in the Herald. What's quite interesting about it is the lawyer that the taxpayers, on behalf of Wilson, paid $475,000 to, his wife actually conducted the interview, Deborah Cunnington. And so you can imagine how objective that interview or how pressing she's going to be as far as an interview. But what I found interesting in is the judge, and I can't find the quote right now because the interview is actually quite large, but he actually says that he considers that a conflict of interest in New Zealand with a judge exists only when the judge has a specific financial or interest in the outcome of the case. So he's taking a very narrow view. But the other thing that's quite interesting, and Kiwis First is really the only legal news website that's actually any news website that's published this, and we did it earlier in the year, was that he was blackmailing the Chief Justice because the only thing that he's right about is that his actions, which have now forced him off the court as far as acting in conflicts of interest, were less egregious than his cohorts, including Sean Elias, who has her fingers in more business pies in New Zealand than Graham Hart. So what we have here is a situation where the judge is quite upset now, and he's actually speaking out quite vehemently about that this is an injustice because what he's done is basically not near as bad as some of his colleagues. And he's right about that, but that doesn't excuse it. What he did is, in one case, he ruled on in favor of the counsel that's appearing in front of him, who's his 50-50 business partner in a multimillion-dollar stud ranch. In the other case that we don't hear anything about is while he was on the Supreme Court, he ruled in favor of an appeal by Bank of New Zealand, a bank at the time that he owed over $1 million to on floating terms. It's unbelievable that any judge could rule in favor of his lender in such a case and not disclose it to the other side. It's incredible.
It's not isolated, though, is it, Vince?
Absolutely not. Judge Wilson, even though now that he's an ex-judge, he's speaking out a little bit, and he's saying that Sean Elias knew all about this, and she's been involved in similar cases before the same judges that she has a business relationship with Alan Galbraith as well. And what I find very interesting, and the press has not picked up on this, is that there was a correspondence that was actually published as part of this whole Judicial Conduct Commissioner's investigation into Judge Wilson, and it was a correspondence between James Former, who's a former president of the Bar Association, with retired Court of Appeal Judge Sir Edmund Thomas. And in that exchange, the president of the Bar, former president of the Bar, Former, is actually telling Thomas not to make a complaint about Judge Wilson. He actually says, "I would hate to see you do that to himself." Another point, they're talking about what Sean Elias knows or knew about the situation and what she should have done. And at that point, Farmer actually says to Thomas in the emails, "Well, Sean Elias, I consider her to be a friend, and as you know, I will always put loyalty before interest in the system." Now, this is incredible for the former president of the Bar Association to actually say that to a retired judge in a communication. What he's saying is that I don't care basically what the Chief Justice does. I'm going to put my loyalty to her before her responsibility, which is paramount to maintain integrity in the system. What New Zealand doesn't have, and it's incredibly important, is an independent bar. Independent bars keep judges honest, because they act as a balance to a position that really has no accountability. Judges are immune from a lot of things, and some people would say, well, that's justifiable. You want a judge to act without fear. But ultimately, they must abide by the rule of law. And when judges don't, and in this case, Wilson clearly did not, you don't want the former president of the Bar Association saying, well, you know, I don't want you to make a complaint. I would hate to see you do that, because he understands the old boy system, which protects this type of corruption. That's insidious because it creates the entire system of corruption, not just one or two corrupt judges, because what happens is even the honest judges see what's happening and they won't expose what's happening with their brethren, because if they do, they will be ostracized. And that's actually happened in New Zealand before with the judge that... Go ahead.
Continue.
With the judge that exposed the Mount Erebus crash, but the Air New Zealand crashed on Mount Erebus. And that was Judge Peter Mann. Three judges actually came out and said it was pilot error. They were actually protecting the national carrier, Air New Zealand, because it was determined, the evidence was that the programming of the airline was, or the airplane was such that it was destined to run into that mountain. And he says, I'm looking at the evidence that the three previous judges did, and I can tell you that this is a litany of lies, basically. The airline is culpable. Well, he was actually ostracized for exposing the fact that not only was it not what these three judges said, but, you know, the compromise that his fellow judges thought that he was instilling upon the judiciary. You just don't do that. You don't out, you know, it's like that, the blue line with the police, you know, they cover up for one another. I mean, if that kind of culture exists to where they cross the lines of decency, morality, and law, then you have a system that's inherently unjust. And that's what we have in New Zealand right now.
So basically, if you're a judge that stands for justice, then you're criminal in the eyes of other judges.
Well, it's I wouldn't say it's quite that bad, but it is pretty bad. The judges today, I can tell you, that are honest cannot afford to speak up about the dishonesty that's occurring with their fellow judges. If they do, they will be ostracized to the point of being forced off the bench. And what's an ex-judge do? They're almost compelled to turn a blind eye to it. And it's just terrible. The whistleblowers should be free to come forward and say, you know, these judges are acting inappropriately. This judge is acting inappropriately. But they can't do that. On a practical level, they cannot do that. And we see it actually in black and white with this correspondence between Farmer and Thomas. There's clearly a culture that goes beyond the judiciary and into the legal fraternity that you just don't expose judicial misconduct. It's insidious.
Well, this wouldn't be isolated just to New Zealand. Of course, similar cases in the United States and the UK where judges are all covering up for each other. It's almost commonplace. My considered opinion is that the legal system itself has been put there with the stated purpose of ensuring facilitative justice, right? And just like with most institutions, their stated purpose is the exact opposite of their real purpose. And I believe that the judiciary in our country, and indeed others around the world, is involved in massive cover-ups, which would be, hugely influential to society.
Well, there's no question about it, but there is a distinction, and there's actually two distinctions that set New Zealand apart from a lot of the other countries. Now, there are corrupt judges. You can't get away from it. I mean, that happens in the UK, the US, and there is occasionally and quite often cover-ups. We don't know the extent of it, but it is a fact that in places like the US and the UK, judges actually go to prison. And in fact, you know, over in Australia, there was a judge who went to prison for lying about this was just 2 years ago, for lying about a speeding ticket. Now, can you imagine that happening here? There is no accountability, and the judges all know it. And if you have just a bare amount of transparency and accountability, that itself is a disciplining influence in the court. And that will cause even corrupt judges to walk the straight and narrow a little bit more because they know there's some accountability. Without that, you don't have it. There's no judge that's ever gone to prison in New Zealand. Well, actually, there was one. There was Hesketh, Robert Hesketh. But he resigned from the bench and went to prison for 8 years. I'm sorry, on 8 counts of fraud. I don't know how long he was in prison, but now he's in charge of the ethics for the New Zealand Law Society. So that's a little bit of a turn of events. He's no longer a judge, but now he's ruling, deciding ethics of other lawyers on the complaints committee for the New Zealand Law Society. It's just incredible.
So Vince, what do you think is the central thread behind this corruption? Do you think anything's behind it in particular, or do you think it's just ordinary corruption between friends? Or,
well, I think it's if you look at the court in New Zealand, it comes from a small pool. There's in the High Court, there's one Maori judge, and there's no other ethnicities. They're all white. Now, that in and of itself. Is not the same cross-section that you see in Parliament. But it goes beyond that. They all are members of the same club. Many of them are related. You have a husband and wife on the High Court.
And which club is this, can I ask? Northern Club?
Well I'm talking about club in a little bit broader sense. They all, well, you see now with the Judge Wilson scandal, he was in business partnerships in horse racing with the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and other judges. They all have this, they all come from the same mold, basically, and they all have the same interests, and they all socialize, and they all, and many times they're related. It's just too incestuous. So you have a very incestuous relationship. You have a very secret club, and I say a club in the sense of the judiciary, where they don't speak out about what's happening when injustices or corruption occurs among their own group. And then you have, as evidence in the Wilson article, when one of their own is called up to task, then you have a PR machine that comes out and works on the judge's behalf and tries to create spin that the judge did nothing wrong.
So the PR machine's on their side too. Yeah, I tend to think that if there was a independent board appointed to monitor such ongoings, that the so-called independent board would be involved too. I tend to, yep. That's the way the Police Complaints Commission works. That's the way the Medical Disciplinary Board works also. All ex-doctors, all in the same clubs.
Absolutely. Well, you certainly need something like that, and you need to have somebody who's truly independent. And that's difficult to find in New Zealand, and that's why there's a greater call now to have some of these retired judges from, like, Australia come over and actually can look at it objectively and make recommendations to Parliament as to what actually needs to be done. Now, this, ironically enough, has happened in the Wilson case. Earlier this year, the retired Chief Justice of New South Wales, Murray Gleeson, came over, called over by the Judicial Conduct Commissioner to look into the complaint of Judge Wilson, what his conduct was from the bench. Now, the reports that I received on that visit was that Murray Gleeson was gobsmacked at how bad it was, that it went far beyond Wilson, that not only should Wilson resign, but there needed to be a total rehaul as far as the judicial accountability. And it started with the Chief Justice because she had so many financial interests and business interests a lot aside from being a judge. Now, ostensibly, judges are supposed to divest themselves from their other business interests when they get on the bench. But the judicial guidelines in New Zealand on conduct, while they are quite clear as to when a judge must disqualify and how qualify themselves and how they must act, it actually says in there that it's not compulsory and it can't be held binding on judges. So the twist and the thickness and the insidious nature of this legislation or this rule that governs, one of the few rules that govern judicial conduct, is it's not enforceable. So judges can, despite the fact that they have a set guideline as far as their conduct in office, they don't have to abide by it. So it's just, and when Murray Gleeson saw this, he was just appalled, and they shipped him back in the middle of the night, effectively. He came here with big fanfare of he's going to come over and assess the situation. But when he was quite candid in saying the whole system's sick, he was sent home quietly. And no one's heard a word from him since.
Freaky stuff, man. And Vince, you personally, I mean, just a little bit of background is, for the listeners. I mean, the original reason why this started all becoming a big interest of yours was a man named Michael Stiasny trying to do a little bit of corrupt stuff with your company, Paragon Oil. And at the time, I believe you were experiencing an awful lot of judicial misconduct because, well, Stiasny was good mates with all of the judges who were presiding over your case in a lot of ways. You were also jailed as well, in some cases without the ability to defend yourself.
Well, no question. I was not only debarred from defending myself, my statement of defense was struck out. And the judge actually said at the formal proof hearing where Stiasny came in with yet another new claim that he had no idea what my defense would be. Ironically enough, he said I had no defense, despite qualifying that he had no way of knowing what my defense would be. But again, to show how incestuous the court is, four of Stiasny's former lawyers now sit on the Auckland High Court. I mean, incredible. Incredible closeness to the judiciary, and you have to wonder how anyone up against someone like Stiasny is not alone, because again, it's this club culture that you have to point people who, within this broader club to the bench, how anyone can get a fair trial when they're on the outside of that. And you know,
Just to run through, Stiasny is what, chairman of Vector Energy and of what else is he involved in again?
Well, he's by trade, he's an insolvency accountant. So he's made a personal fortune just tearing companies apart.
And he's involved with Metro Water too.
He was, I believe.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Our special guest is Vince Seema from kiwisfirst.co.nz, and we'll be right back.
Some kind of way out of here. Say the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine. Plowman, dig my
We are back live with our very special guest, Vince Seema from kiwisfirst.co.nz. And as far as I know, the only decent reporting that ever goes on the courts of New Zealand comes directly from this website. Vince, welcome back.
Thank you, Vinny.
You're very welcome. You said over the break that the banks were controlling to a certain extent of everything going on here in this country. What's that about?
Well, it's a significant influence. Many of the banks provide a lot of benefits to the judges traditionally in forms of beach houses during the holidays and stuff like that. And certainly the person that I ran up against, Michael Stiasny, has deep roots with the banks. So there is a lot of interconnection. I mean, you can see it in a lot of the rulings if you pay attention with the banks typically overcharge their credit card customers in New Zealand. And occasionally the Commerce Commission will take them to court. And invariably, as a result of these overcharging schemes, the banks make tens of millions of dollars, and then they're fined with $1 million fine as a result of their inappropriate fee charging. So it's a good business. If you make tens of millions of dollars and you have to pay $1 million fine, they do that all the time. And there's really no incentive to change business practices.
Well, they wouldn't be really. I mean, if you're making money from going about your business, why would you change the way you're going about your business? You know, it doesn't even make a difference. These people are, well, in my opinion, well, they don't really care, quite frankly, about justice or anything. They're only convinced with lining their own pockets and, I don't know, having a good old merry time, going to functions and whatnot. You know, it's almost as though justice itself, for me, is about doing what's right. Justice for these people seems to be more along the lines of protocol and following rules and that kind of thing, rather than, you know, really trying to do the right thing here.
Well, I would generally agree with that. You don't want to put all of them in the same pot, basically, but my experience, and it's been extensive, is that it's pervasive in the judiciary that and business. There's very little commercial regulation, and the courts really don't enforce what legislation there is against their mates. So you have a situation where it's allowed to fester and grow and virtually unimpeded.
Mate, it's rough. And as far as successes are concerned, you've only had the one, which was on this Friday, where there's a kind of an agreement been reached that you'll, you know, make your best efforts to remove one particular sentence. And I cannot believe what did it take, like 2 hours? For them to define the issue, that they just wanted a singular sentence removed from a website which you no longer control?
I think
the whole process, it just seems ridiculous to me.
Well, the hearing lasted an hour, but I will say on the broader issue, a lawyer told me a long time ago who was familiar with my case, he said you can actually win by losing. If every time you lose, the judges actually say, well, the law doesn't apply in this case for some spurious reason, and they do it not once, not twice, but every time you appear, you actually show the system for what it is. You're actually winning. You're proving your point. And you're talking to someone here that is regularly prevented from defending himself in court, and the courts are always saying that I have no right to defend myself. Well, it's a statutory right. It's the most elementary right to any honorable court system. The fact that judges repeatedly say that I'm not allowed in court to defend myself is in itself proof that what I'm saying is correct. And Friday was the case where the Solicitor General actually tried to put me in prison. The application was to put me in prison. And she stood up there and said, well, this is for a minor change or one to his website. And it was in relation to an injunction. It says, I can't say that Stiastny deliberately overcharged my company when it was in receivership. And the reference that she wanted expunged from the website actually had the word inadvertent in it. So that he had claimed that he had inadvertently overcharged the company, which was not, I mean, it was common ground. So when that was raised before the judges and they actually said, well, that's, you know, they tended to agree that that was in no way a breach of the injunction. They were trying to save face for the fact that we were in court. They wanted to do something. So they actually asked me to change one other line in the website to the degree that I was able to. And I said that, well, that line doesn't breach the injunction either. And their response was, well, we're looking for a pragmatic solution. So they were clearly looking to save face. And I agreed to it in the end on the basis that they had to state that the Solicitor General's application to imprison me was unsuccessful. And I was doing this without accepting any culpability or even accepting that the line that they wanted removed was in breach of the injunction in any way. And they agreed to that. So on that premise, on that proviso, I agreed to the extent that I'm able, to try to get that line expunged from the website that I no longer control. We're not talking about Kiwis First here. We're talking about another website, which I'm not allowed to name.
That doesn't exist. Am I allowed to name it?
Well, you're not party to the injunction, but conceivably you could be considered my agent if I'm talking to you on the phone now, so I would prefer that you not mention it in this interview.
Wow, so it's that deep a one, is it?
Oh, they cover everything, but I just don't want to, for the minor.
I understand.
I don't want to risk their wrath over something. You pick your battles. Larger battles here with the corruption that occurs.
Yeah, yeah. No point senselessly, endangering ourselves. With my experience, when you go overseas to do a little bit of business back home in the States, sometimes when you come back, you just get thrown straight in jail. And I was just like, what the hell, man? How can they do that?
Well, it's very interesting. This all stems from the Solicitor General's trial where they actually had no evidence of any breach on Kiwis First. And when I pointed it out to the judges said, well, we're not interested in the lack of evidence. We're more interested in what counsel says from the bar, which was an astounding thing to say because in a free law-abiding society and court culture, you should be convicted on the evidence. But to get around that, what I find is they typically have these trials when I'm out of the country. Three times and I'm not gone that long. One time, the first time, I was out of the country for 2 weeks. Judge Potter convened a hearing to imprison me. In the 2 weeks that I was gone, she knew I was out of the country. She knew that I was legally unrepresented, and she called a snap trial so that I wouldn't be able to appear. And when I arrived back at Auckland International Airport, I was promptly arrested, taken to court, and then I was fronted in before her and asked to make submissions on how long of a sentence she should give me. My response was, I have no access. I just was hauled from prison. I need my legal files so I can make submissions as far as court authorities, and she wouldn't even allow that. Now, anybody who saw that would have thought we were in North Korea. That just doesn't happen. That's such a fundamental breach of natural justice to try a man when he's out of the country, put him in prison, and won't even allow access to legal authorities to argue how long the sentence should be. It was totally a sham trial. And that was the first time. And I guess because that was so successful, two other times when I was out of the country, I came back and I was arrested at the airport. This last time, I came back from a trip in September. I actually felt like I unwelcome because I didn't get the welcoming committee of the police arresting me at the customs. I'm not complaining, but it seemed like it was getting routine.
But nobody loves me anymore.
Yeah, I'm not wanted. Yeah. But it's interesting. the prison officials know what's going on. They didn't like me being there. They were as upset as anyone that this kind of stuff is occurring. When I was in prison each time, a word was spreading through the prison as to what's actually going on. And I think, as terrible of an experience as that was, people now know that there are political prisoners in New Zealand, and the word is getting out, and it's coming from it's a groundswell. It's slow. It's still below the radar. There's a tremendous amount of apathy as to what's occurring, and a lot of people just they're in the denial phase. But more and more people are realizing what's actually going on, and that my case is far from unique. Mine's visible because I've been so tenacious in fighting it. Most people fold well before it gets to the point of going to prison, as happened in my case.
So you've actually kind of stood up for your rights to the point of imprisonment. And, you know, it's a rare individual indeed who would do this just for themselves, let alone do it for everybody's benefit, as you have done. And, you know, salute to you, bro.
Well, thank you, Benny. My kids, the interest of my kids who live here and have a future ahead of them, compels me to do it more than anything. I want them to live in a free society where they don't have to worry about getting in prison for what they say out in the street. It's so important to be able to, in a free democracy, to have those basic liberties to speak freely. It's worth fighting for, because once that liberty falls, then the other ones are like dominoes.
Yeah. And one would hope that the reverse is true as well, that if you expose one, then the rest will fall as dominoes. And is this, in fact, one of the goals here, Vince, to expose corruption to the point of actually getting judges disbarred and kicked out, or what?
Well, I actually think the best thing that could happen is for a New Zealand judge to go to prison. For what they've done on the bench. I think that would send a message that they're not bulletproof, and it will cause them to act more responsibly. Right now, there is a lot of credence in that old expression that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. The other thing that I'm pushing Parliament to do, and I actually had an extensive meeting with Lockwood Smith, the Speaker of the House, last week, is to have all court proceedings recorded. That would instill a tremendous amount of discipline, because if the judge knows that there's a record that exists and other people have it, they're less likely to create a fictional account of what's happened in their courtroom. And believe me, Vinny, that happens a lot. Judges will alter the official record because they're the only ones that keep it. There is, in the high court, very few proceedings are audio recorded. And what I'm pushing for is for everything that happens in a public courtroom to be recorded. We have it in Parliament. We have a contemporaneous medium of television capturing everything that happens in Parliament. Why can't we have that in the courts? There's no reason why we shouldn't have it. And yet the judges are fighting it. Tooth and nail. They don't want recording in the courtrooms. Well, why? Why don't they want that? It's a good question.
They probably throw out little excuses like, oh, we need to protect the victims of crime, etc., etc. Yeah, the victims of crime, as in criminal justice system. That's why, as far as I'm concerned, that's why they call it the criminal justice system, because it's just criminal.
Well, I've seen enough of it. I've seen my share of it. But in those cases where something legitimately needs to be suppressed, the judge still has control over that official record. But at least it exists, and it can be challenged if the judge acts to suppress an accurate audio report.
You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. And we'll be right back.
I hope you like a jamming tune. I want to jam it.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
it's gonna rain, rain, rain. And I take some cover.
We're back live with our special guest, Vince Seymour from kiwisfirst.co.nz. We've been talking about judicial corruption, as if there's anything else to talk about when you're concerning the judiciary. Yep. It's a pretty terrible friggin' mess, to put it lightly. And I'm kind of thinking here, well, there's sort of like a sliding scale going here, Vince, don't you think, that people's rights are getting gradually eroded away? And I think, you know, we're on the path from freedom to tyranny, right? And in the future, or at least this is the vision, there'll only be two types of people, the elite and the slave. And I think we fall into the former category because we don't really support the ultimate elite structure here, you know? I mean, we kind of like honest business people, that kind of thing. Those people aren't part of the elite, anyway.
Hmm. Yeah.
Now, with the New Zealand courts, you've been fighting for upwards of 5 years almost, haven't you? About all this, and is there a worst thing that you've seen, Vince?
That's hard to. That's a good question, but it's a hard one to answer.
I thought it might be.
So much that I haven't made a top 10 list, and part of that's probably, for mental health reasons, you don't want to concentrate on just how bad it is. What I like to believe is that while it's a long and arduous process, that I am making headway, along with others. I'm not fighting this battle alone. But what I truly believe, and all I'm pushing for, is to actually have the transparency that comes with accurate recording in the courtrooms and some actual accountability, some kind of process that has real teeth in it to hold judges accountable when they are guilty of misconduct. And if those two things happen, you know, we're not going to get all the corrupt judges off the court. But what we can do, and it's very, I think, easy to achieve if the will is there of the legislator, is to create a requirement that court proceedings be recorded and that there's actually an oversight committee that does have real teeth in holding judges accountable when they're truly guilty of misconduct. And that will, as I said before, instill discipline upon the court and cause even the corrupt judges to act with some integrity. And that will go a long way. It's reasonable. It's a reasonable objective that can be done here within the next couple of years, and that's what I'm fighting for, and that's what keeps me going.
Now, specifically, how you say it would be easy to achieve if there was the political will, how could we manufacture this political will?
Well, I think everybody should do their little bit in contacting their MP and requesting that they push for accurate recordings in the court. There's actually a bill, it's the Public Records Act 2005, which says that all government agencies must keep accurate records of the proceedings and anything, the processes and that of government. For some bizarre reason, and I would have to say unlawful reason, the judiciary has made themselves exempt to that act. The reading of the act clearly compels them as a branch of government to keep accurate records, but they have taken a position that it doesn't apply to them. And this just shows how deep-seated the problem is and how arrogant the judiciary as a group is, that they think that the laws that affect everybody else don't affect them. I spoke earlier about the guidelines for professional conduct, one of the few rules that govern their conduct, and it says clearly in it that they're not compelled to abide by those rules. So it's meaningless. Yeah, that's what we should be moving it toward.
It sounds reasonable, right? And this is the interesting thing that I find is when people make reasonable requests, they get demonized and get called crazy. You know?
Oh, Vinny, that's an excellent point. And that's what really happens. The Bill of Rights here, by many judges, call it the Rogue's Charter. It shows the disrespect that they have for a major piece of legislation which New Zealand passed to conform to the United States Charter. Such disrespect for a piece of seminal legislation is indicative of what a problem we have. And the judges don't like it because it gives the average person certain rights. They don't like that. The right to natural justice, the right to speak freely, the right to have to bind the crown officials to act properly in the court and sue them like you can anybody. They hate that. So when you have that kind of mentality, it's very difficult to fight that. I think while it's a slow and, as I said, arduous process, I think we're making headway. People are waking up to how bad it is, and people do want change. And the resignation of Bill Wilson last week in the Supreme Court shows that some headway is being made.
Yeah, yeah. And again, thank you very much, Vince, for coming on the show and for doing all that you do. Ladies and gentlemen, his website is kiwisfirst.co.nz. You can check out the fabulous work that he does there. And again, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to another edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. And we'll be back tomorrow with a little bit more exposés into the chronic corruption that's going on every day, everywhere.